We're holding on page 154 in Rosh Hashanah, the paragraph labeled Daf Chaf Ches Amud Beis, beginning mitzvahs. Page 154, yeah. Middle of first chapter. Oh, it says 134. Right?
Don't get scared.
Okay, the paragraph is labeled Daf Chaf Ches Amud Beis, the middle of the page.
Okay.
So the Gemara is discussing the whole matter of mitzvah tzrichas kavana or not. When you're doing a mitzvah, do you have to have in mind that you're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah? For example, let's say you're hearing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, intending to hear it as a musical instrument. Are you still yotze, even though you're not having in mind the mitzvah? And so the Gemara has a whole sugya on the subject. Then in the course of it, then the Gemara mentions that if you're going to say mitzvahs ein sriches kavana, then what about when we sit in the sukkah shmini atzeres? Isn't that a problem of bal tosif? If mela, if you have to have kavana for the mitzvah, fine. We can say on shmini atzeres we sit in the sukkah. We know we sit in there because it's speaker d'yoma. But we can use the excuse that we're sitting in there because it's nice weather and we want to enjoy the and we want to enjoy it. What we do when it's raining, that's another matter where we say we're crazy people and we like the rain, whatever. The point is, though, but if you say mitzvahs ein tzrichas kavana, wouldn't it be a problem because you're sitting in the sukkah on extra day and wouldn't it be an issue of bal tosif? So the Gemara says no, because the Gemara discusses that mitzvahs ein over alein el bismanon, that no, when it comes to a mitzvah, the concept of bal tosif would only apply at the time you're doing the mitzvah. Meaning, in other words, so for example, say you're putting on a pair of tzitzis, and instead of putting four tzitzis on it, you're putting five, then you have a problem of bal tosif, or five parashiyos and tefillin, or things like that. But here, where you're doing it an extra day, that's not called bal tosif. So the Gemara, two pairs of tzitzis wouldn't be bal tosif, because each pair requires its own tzitzis. Famously, I think many people know that the famous Rosh Hashiva of Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg used to wear many, many pairs of tzitzis because he wanted to follow all the different opinions as far as how they should be tied and so on and so forth. So famously, he used to wear many pairs. Yeah, there's no issue about tzitzis with that because each four-cornered garment needs tzitzis. But yeah. So the Gemara says, Masi Rav Shimon bar Abba. So Rav Shimon bar Abba says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, "Minayim makoyin sha'olu l'duchan." How do we know when the koyin is going up to duchan to bench with birkas koyinim? Shalo yomar, he shouldn't say, "Hoyover nosnali Torah rashus lavorich es Yisrael." Since the Torah has given me permission to bless the Jewish people, I don't have to stick to the nusach exclusively that it says in the pesukim. Oisif bracha achas mishaliyah. I can add a bracha of my own. Kigoyin, for example, he might think to add the pasuk Hashem alakev esechem Yosef aleichem, that Hashem should add to you as many as you are now. So note, Talmud Loimar, the pasuk says, Lo say sihu ala dovo. Don't add anything to the mitzvah that Hashem is telling you. Now, the Gemara continues and asks, V'ha'ach ha'kivin de'borichle, once he said the three psukim yivarecha yor yisa, over leizmane, on the face of it, at that point, the time of the mitzvah has passed, he's completed the mitzvah, v'katoni de'oba v'chula, and still the Braise is saying that if you were to add a fourth bracha at that point, then he would be over. So how does that fit? So the Gemara starts saying, first, maybe it means that he would say that pasuk, Yosef Hashem aleichem kochem, in the middle, you would say between one of the three psukim, and in that case, he hasn't completed the mitzvah yet. Then the Gemara says, no, what it means is because with Birkas Koyanim, you could do it over and over again during the same day. In principle, every time a Koyan comes to a different shul, he could duchen again. He is not required to, but he could. So therefore, you can still call it the time of the mitzvah as compared to once Shmini Atzeres comes, then the time of the mitzvah of Sukkah is over. In this connection, by the way, they ask the question that the Koyanim after Duchening, they do say an extra bracha. They say the Pasuk Hashkifa. They say, we've done what you told us to do. Now, Hashem, you do us what you do for us what you said, Hashkifa Mlein Kodshifa. So why is that not considered Bal Tosif? And the answer is because they're not saying it upon him. They're not saying it facing towards the Sibur and with their hands outstretched and in the position for Birkas Koyanim and so forth. They're saying it while they're turned towards the Oren with their hands down. So that's already not part of Birkas Koyanim. That's a separate thing. Yeah, it's in the Siddur, where we say Adu Bamorim after Duchening, when we say the paragraph Adu Bamorim, so it has there, but at the same time, they say a paragraph that begins Ribono Shel Olam Asisa Masha Gazarta Olam. Yeah. They both come from Gemaras. Adu Bamorim comes from Gemara in Brochus, and Ribono Shel Olam Asisa Masha Gazarta Olam comes from Gemara in Soita. Yeah. The Mishnah goes on, so again, talking about the point, now the Mishnah makes the point that if you're, suppose, for example, that you hear somebody blowing shofar, you have to be mechavim for it. So that's what they have led the Gemara into that whole discussion of mitzvah tzuchas kavana. Does it mean that you have to be mechavim to actually be yotz of the mitzvah, or is it enough that you're mechavim in the sense that you're actually paying attention and making sure you're not just hearing an echo and making sure you're hearing the sounds in the proper order and so forth? So the Mishnah mentions in that connection to show you the importance of kavana. Pasuk says, by the war with Amalek in Parshas B'Shalach, V'hoya kasha yorim Moshe yodoy v'gova Yisrael v'goyma, when Moshe would lift up his hands, then the Jewish people would be stronger, and so forth, and then we put down his hands, etc. The question is, v'chiyodav shal Moshe oisis mechama oishoveres mechama, do Moshe's hands make or break the war? How can we say, whenever he's lifting up his hands, the Jewish people are winning? Why is that? And the answer is Ella Loy Malach. No, it comes to tell you, Bizman Shem is stacked in Yisrael Klapi Maila. When the Jewish people are looking up towards Hashem, and the point is, in other words, usually in a battle, you should be focusing on the enemy. Here the Mishnah, based on the Pasuk, is making a point that instead they had to be as much as possible focused on Hashem. Or Mishabdin Libo Mavim Shabashamayim, and they're subjugating their hearts, they're being mevatel their desires to Hashem, to their Father in heaven, Hoyu Misgabrin, then they would be stronger. Vim Lav, and if not, Hoyu Noflim, then they would fall in battle. Marsha points out, we have, and the reason why it has to mention Meshabdin Livam Shabalavim Shabashmayim, before that we find in Parshas B'Shalach, they were not as focused on Hashem as they should be. They were complaining about the mon. They left over the mon. Some of them, at least, Dasan Aviram, left over mon from one day to the next and went out to gather mon on Shabbos in Refidim. They were complaining that they don't have water and asking Hashem, Hayesh Hashem B'Kirbenu. So therefore, now Hashem shows them that, no, when you, the same way as Moshe is lifting up his hands, when you do the same thing with your thoughts and you lift them up towards Hashem, then Hoyu Misgabrim. And if not, then Moshe's hands are going to fall, and then Moshe's hands are going to get weakened, and you're going to fall. Marsha also points out, this is also why, usually when a person davens for the tzibur, he usually stands in a low place. All over Shas, we have the expression, when a person davens by the Amud, we're going to have it later in the Masechta as well, the expression is yoded lifnat teva. The person goes down in front of the teva. There are even shuls, actually, there exist shuls where the chazan's place is actually physically lower than the rest of the shul, in token of that. Why is Moshe saying over here, Olu Rosh HaGiva, he went up to the top of a hill over there? The reason is, in order that everybody can see him, and when they see his hands raised up, then that also motivates them to raise them, their minds up towards Hashem, and therefore to win.
Down like a swastika, where it's a coach, there's a lot of them we actually go down.
Yeah. Kayotza Badava Ata Omer, in a similar vein you have later on, Parshas Chukas. They complained about the mon again, and Hashem sent snakes. Then the people come to Moshe and ask him to daven. By Yomer Hashem on Moshe, Hashem tells Moshe, make an image of a snake and put it on a pole. And the Pasuk says, whoever sees it, you can ask the same question. Does a snake kill or bring alive? And one of the points is, now this, are we talking about the physical snakes that bit them, or are we talking about the regular, the living snakes that bit them, or are we talking about this image of the snake? In a way, we're talking about both. Nachash Memis would refer to the biological snakes that are biting them. The fact is, yes, a person is bitten by a snake, but derech hateva they die, but nevertheless, it's all based on the Eibishter controlling things. And the Nachash that's on the pole, is that really Mechaya? Ella, same thing. When the Jewish people are looking upward, and they're subjugating their hearts to Hashem and to their Father in heaven, then they would be healed. And if not, then they would waste away. Or there's a different gears in Nizoikin, they would be injured and harmed by the snake. So the same idea. In other words, that was why Hashem told Moshe to put the copper snake on a pole so everybody can look up. And while they're looking up and realizing that they're looking up physically, then it also gives them the idea to motivates them to look up spiritually and to look up and realize that they depend on Hashem.
Lashon Hara kills at least three people.
Lashon Hara, yeah. That's why they were being punished with snakes. The Rebbe, by the way, makes a point in a couple of sichas on this, that the reason why we have to mention both, that they had to mistaken klapim mila and mishabnas libim damim shavashmayim, based on what Marsho is saying over here. We're saying in both cases, it was they had acted wrongly. They had showed they're not focused enough on Hashem, and they had insulted Hashem, ayesh Hashem b'kribenu, and they had insulted Moshe. So therefore, it wasn't enough for them to just ask Moshe to daven on their behalf. They had to actually do tshuva, mishabdim libam, abim shabashmayim, and only then are they able to win the war, and only then are they able to be cured from the snake bites. Yom Tov Shor Rosh Hashanah Perek Revi. So this perek continues talking about the dinim of Rosh Hashanah. Starts off with Yom Tov Shor Rosh Hashanah Shachalis B'Shabbos, that we don't blow shofar outside of Beis Din when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Eventually, then in the middle of the perek, it talks about a case that happened in the times of the Beis Mikdash, where the Edim, usually what it is like this. Now the moon is visible on the evening of the 29th. Once in a while, occasionally it could be visible even before Shkia, but that's pretty rare because usually the sun would wash it out. Usually you would see it during a short time after Shkia. The Rambam mentions in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, you have approximately a 20-minute window when you could expect to see it. So you can't be Makadosh the Chodesh at night, the Gemara establishes at the beginning of the third Perek. Therefore, so usually the Edim would come first thing on the morning of the 30th, and after Beis Din hears them out, they would declare that day as Rosh Chodesh, and in the case of Rosh Hashanah, that's the one day Rosh Hashanah. So the Mishnah describes there was a scenario where the Edim didn't come until after they had to bring the Korban Tomei Shoben HaBayim. And now they had a problem. What do we do as far as the Shir Shoyim? The Gemara mentions that every Yom Tov has a special Shir Shoyim. So now they didn't know which one they should do. But there's in fact a good deal of discussion why the Mishnah focuses only on that. Why does the Mishnah focus on the fact that they didn't know whether they should bring the Korban Musaf of Rosh Hashanah and of Rosh Chodesh? Tosfos discusses that point. Anyway, the Gemara itself brings a machlokes. This doesn't mean because they didn't know what to do, did they say the Shir of the weekday or did they not say a Shir at all? Anyway, the Mishnah mentions, therefore, the Beis Din of that time, the Sanhedrin of that time, made a takana that from now on we're only accepting Edim until the time of the Korban Tomei Shoben HaBayim, until Mincha time. If they come any later than that, we tell them, come back tomorrow, and that's when we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. And then the Gemara in Beitza talks about further about that. The Mishnah mentions after the Korban, then they went back to the original takana. Nevertheless, the Gemara in Beitza says they still kept the interim takana, that in such a case, Noyagan Osal Yom Kodesh Lamacha Kodesh, which is why we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah now and why we consider them like Yom Arichta, unlike every other two day Yom. Anyway, so that leads the Gemara into a discussion of the Shir Shoyom that they would say every day in the Bismarck. So Tanya, we learn a Braisa of Yehuda Omer Meshum Rabbi Akiva. Barishan Mahu Omer, what shir would they say on Sunday in the Beis Mikdash? And of course, every shir that we're saying over here is also what we say in davening. They'd say the kapitel, Hashem Arotzim Loyal Tevo V'Yoshveva. Each time it means the entire kapitel. Why is that kapitel appropriate? Al Shum Shekona V'Hikna V'Shalit V'Sholak Ba'olam. Because on that day, Hashem, so to speak, acquired the world. He brought the world into existence, and therefore it's a kinyan. It's something that it's an acquisition. It's something. It's a possession of Hashem. We have the obviously kona doesn't mean he acquired it from somebody else, but it's like the expression we have in Pirkei Avos Chamisha Kinyonim. Kona Hakadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olam means it's so to speak. It's an asset that now Hashem has. So Hashem now has the world. He created the world, and now he has that asset, the hikna, and he made it. He was machneh to the people, to the creatures, and to the people who live in the world, in order that they should be able to make a din of a tachtonim in it. The shalak ba'olamai, and he ruled exclusively in his world. Rashi mentions on the pesukim, for example, that there wasn't any malachim were even created on that day; they were created only the next day. So on the first day, Hashem is, so to speak, the only existence in the world. So therefore, Marsha says that the connection is that's why you have. That's Hashem Oritzim Loya, that Hashem owns the world. Then you have Mi Yala Bahar Hashem Niki Chapayim of Arlev. Of that refers to the Hikna, that Hashem gave the world over to people who act in the proper ways. And the fact that he's Sholak Ba'olamah, the fact that Hashem is the exclusive ruler, we see in the Pesukim at the end, Susharim Hashem Yovi Melech HaKavim. So that's the connection with Sunday. Basheni Mahu Omer, what would they say on Monday? Capital Memches, Gonel Hashem Mahulam Oid Vagrema. Hashem is very great and very praised in Be'ir Alekenu, in the city of Hashem. That means Al Shem Shechilak Maisav, on that day, Hashem divided up his works on that day. Hashem made the separation of Vayavdel Elokim, Ben Amayim, between the water below and above the Rakia, U'molach Aleihem, and he ruled over them. So that's what we have, Godel Hashem, Mahula Ma'od, and it talks about how Hashem rules over the world, and we see his kingship. Marshall says that's why you have. So you have in that capital, Yifei Noif Mesois Kol Aretz. We learned before that Yifei Noif, one meaning of it is beautiful like a kala. So referring to Yerushalayim, which is the centerpiece of the entire physical world, is beautiful like a kala. So we see that now you have, for the first time, there's a difference between Oyonim and Tachtonim. Eitz Yosef brings another point as well, that when we say that Hashem divided up between the Oyonim and the Tachtonim, doesn't just mean there's a physical division, it means there's also a division in how Hashem runs those. The upper worlds, Hashem, so to speak, rules over more directly. The lower ones, Hashem rules through the laws of nature that he created. Therefore, we can say there's two different types of anhaga that we perceive of how Hashem runs things. But Gimel Mahu Omer, and what would they say on Tuesday? Elokim Nitzav Va'adas Keil, capital Pei Beis, Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem, meaning the Dayanim, and that's Hashem Shegila Eretz B'chochmasei. On that day, Hashem revealed the dry land with his chochma. He told the water to recede into the oceans and then revealed the dry land, Beheichen Tevel Adosei, and prepared Tevel, particularly Tevel, Mephoshim explains, often means the inhabited areas of the world. Eretz means the world in general, inhabited and uninhabited. Tevel generally means the inhabited areas. Anyway, La'adosei, for his congregation, therefore Ba'adas Keil. Marsha also adds the point in that capital we have it's instructions for the Dayanim, Admosai Tishbatu Ovel, Shiftu Dovid Yosin, etc. Because proper Mishpat is what keeps the world running, what keeps the world. And in fact, when they had Chomos and everything before the Mabel, is when the world was reflooded. So therefore, this capital stresses the point, make sure to act, you Dayanim, make sure to act in a way that the world will remain, that the world will remain inhabited. That's Tuesday. The Dalad Mahu Omer, what capital would they say on Wednesday? Keil Nekamas Hashem, Keil Nekamas Efiyah, which is talking about the punishment of the Rishoyim. Al Shem Shabora Chama Olavonim, because on Wednesday is when Hashem created the sun and moon of the Osid Lipora Me'ev Dehen, and in the future Hashem is going to punish those who worship them. So therefore we talk about Keil Nekamas Hashem, and we talk about what Hashem is going to do for them. In fact, Eitz Yosef refers over here to a Gemara in Brochas that mentions that every day when the sun rises and the kings put on their crowns, like to show we're doing this with the full power of our kingship and we're going and worshiping the sun, then that makes Hashem angry. So therefore that's Keil Nekamas Hashem, that Hashem is going to take Nekamah from them. And Hefiah, in fact, he says the word Hefiah means to shine. So it means that Hashem is going to shine forth and outshine the sun and the moon, and go and punish these kings and these other people who worship these heavenly bodies. Marsha also mentions over here in a Gemara in Erchin that capital, which was, again talks about the punishment of the Rishoyim, it also refers to the Rishoyim who destroyed the Beis Mikdash. And now the Gemara in Erchin tells us the Churban both times happened on a Sunday. And the Shir Shoyim for Sunday, as we said, is L'Hashem Aratzim Loya. But both times, the Gemara says that Hashem put it into the minds of the Levim, and they started singing the wrong Shir Shoyim. They started singing this one, Keil Nekamas, as if to say, yes, the Goyim are destroying the Beis Mikdash because Hashem is allowing it, but Hashem is going to punish them and take his revenge on them for everything they did. Next, Behei Mahu Omer, what capital would they say on Thursday? Haninu le'lekimu zeinu horiyu le'lekeyakov, sing to Hashem our strength, sing to shout out to Hashem, al shem shebara oifus v'dogim, because on Thursday Hashem created the birds and the fish, l'shabeach l'shmoi, to bring praise to his name. Meaning Rashi says a person sees different kinds of birds, then that causes a person, that motivates a person to praise Hashem, who created so many different kinds of amazing creatures. Eitz Yosef points out, that's why you have the word Hauninu. If it just meant you yourself sing, then it would be Rananu. Hauninu is actually a transitive verb. You cause to sing. So that means, in other words, that the birds cause us, when we see all the different kinds of birds and fish and whatnot out there, that causes us to sing to Hashem. Bevov Mahu Omer, what do they say on Friday? Hashem Moloch Geus Lovesh. Hashem has ruled. He's dressed himself, so to speak, in grandeur. Al Shem Shagom Maisa from Malachta Molach Alem, because on Friday Hashem finished all of his work of creating the world and ruled over them. So therefore Hashem Molach, now Hashem is fully the king over the world. Because now all the subjects have been created, and Eitz Yosef adds the point also, in particular, human beings were created. Ein melech b'loyam. So until Adam and Chava were created, you can't really speak of Hashem fully as a melech. B'zayin mahu oimer, what do they say on Shabbos? Mizmer shir yom Shabbos, which is l'yom shekulei Shabbos. That capital refers not to the weekly Shabbos, it refers to the Shabbos of the future, when, as it actually says, the world is going to be destroyed, which we'll talk about in a minute what that means. And nobody's going to be, there's no people and no malachas of everything. So therefore it's a Shabbos. It's the ultimate Shabbos, because Shabbos after all means cessation. So it means everything is going to cease. So that's the capital for Shabbos. But Amar Rav Nechemia, so that was all Rav Yehuda saying that in the name of Rav Akiva. But Amar Rav Nechemia, v'chimara Rav Akiva, l'chalek ben aprokim alov. The question is, though, why does Rav Akiva consider that he's distinguishing between all these kapitlach? Meaning, in other words, the first six were saying, refer to things that Hashem did during Ma'aseh Bereishis. All of a sudden, with Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos, you're saying you're not referring to what Hashem did in the past, but what Hashem will do in the future after the 6,000 years of world history. So why the difference? All of them should be referring to the past. Ella, sort of Nehemiah goes through the whole list again. Why he has to go through the whole list again? There's a couple of different explanations. Ben Yehoyada says, in order to show, it's not just, you shouldn't think, he's going to say, I'm like an Amora, where sometimes you'll have an Amora will take something that a Tana says and fix up a couple of the words to make it work. No, Rabbi Nehemiah is saying, exactly the way I'm going to quote now is how I heard it from Rabbi Akiva, word for word. There's a set of Truvis called Knesset Yechezkel, the author of Rabbi Chezkel Katzenellenbergen was a Rav in the famous Kehillah of Altona a couple of hundred years back before Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. So he wrote a Truva about this, and he explains Rabbi Nechemia's point with repeating the whole thing is because like this, he discusses at some length there that you could look at it, not just Reb Nechemia saying you have to distinguish between past and future. You can also ask the question, when David wrote all these other kapitlach, was he meaning with each one of them to refer to what happened on the respective day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, and therefore, so the Chachamim followed that in determining which one should be for which day, or is it that he didn't have any particular days in mind and the Chachamim came up with it on their own? So therefore, Rav Nechemia repeats the whole thing in order to stress that he has a different viewpoint on how, on why each of these kapitlach has the theme that it does in the first place. About the story of Yechezkel, by the way, worth telling a little maisala about him. He was among other things, he being the shtotter of, sometimes he davened by the Yomur, but apparently he wasn't very good at chazonos. So in particular, when it came to Shemin in Shemin Esri, to Machal Kochayim, he had a way of doing it that invited a certain amount of ridicule. So there was a Yid in town who used to go. He would go into bars and taverns and go and copy and parody the Rav's Machal Kochayim, and the people were there would give him money for drinks. So they told the Rav about it. It's a big chutzpah that this guy is doing. So the Rav, though, this Rabbi Cheskel says, you know what, fine, it's a harnosa for a yid, let him. And he wrote him out a letter that says, in order to be mechalkel, his chayim, in order to sustain his life, I give this yid permission, the bearer of this letter, permission to do mechalkel chayim. Okay. So Rav Nechemia goes through the whole thing again. Ela barishin shekona v'hikna v'shalat ba'olamai. Yes, on Sunday, the capital is because Hashem acquired and gave over the world to humanity and ruled in his world. The beis shechilak ma'isa v'malach aleihem. On Monday, he divided up his works, heaven from earth, and ruled over them. And it's alav yoshev amorim. And he was, so to speak, now elevated and sat in the heavens. In other words, Hashem is everywhere, but we talk about Hashem as being more enthroned in Shemayim than on earth. The Gimel Shagila Eretz B'chachmasi V'heichem Tevel Adosei. On Tuesday, he revealed the earth, the dry land, with his chachma and prepared the world and prepared the settled world for his Eda, for his congregation. But Dalet Shebarach Hamol Levonav Asid Liparam Evdehem. He created the sun and moon and is going to punish those who worship them. Behei Shebarach Ufis V'dogim L'Shabeach L'Shmoy. On Thursday, he created the birds and the fish who praise his name, that we should praise his name that way when we see all the amazing things that he created. On Friday, he finished all of his works, all of his malacha, and ruled over them. And Bezayin al Shem Sheshavas. Now, here is where Reb Nechemia disagrees and says the Shir Shoyim for Shabbos is because Hashem rested on the seventh day, so therefore Mizmor Shir Yom Shabbos is on that theme, not about the Shvisa La'asid Lavoi, but rather the Shvisa in the past. Eitz Yosef mentions over here that you have the Medrash mentions that originally Hashem, that originally the first Shabbos after Hashem created the world, the world was light the entire time. There was no darkness on that Shabbos. Only on Motzei Shabbos it got dark. And the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah that Odom Rishon got frightened, and that's when Hashem gave him the idea to strike two stones together to make fire, and that's why we say Bodom Odom Eish on Motzei Shabbos. So it's really kind of both. So there is that the capital can be referring to the time Ma'asid Lava Yom Shekulei Shabbos, but it can also be referring to that unique Shabbos of Ma'aseh Bereishis. Okay, so the Gemara says, "V'kamif the gibidur of Katin." The underlying machloikus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia is about what Rav Katina says. The Amr of Katina, Shita al v'shnin have alma. The world as we know it is going to last for 6,000 years. V'chad bari. And then there's going to be 1,000 years when it's destroyed. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "V'niska Hashem levade by Yemahu." Hashem will be exalted on that day alone. So a day is 1,000 years. Ki elof shanim be'necho ki emesmel. So therefore, it means that Hashem will be exalted alone. In other words, there's not going to be any mitzios that anybody's going to see anything other than Elokus. Abaya amatrei charuv. Abaya says there's going to be two periods of charuv, 2,000 years. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yichayenu miyemayim. Hashem will keep us alive during the 2 days. Again, meaning during the 2,000 years. And then by yemashlishi nikimenu v'nichya lafonim. The Gemara mentions in the Sanhedrin that even when the world is destroyed, it says whether the tzaddikim are going to be floating on the water with wings. So what does all this mean? What's this chad charuv business? So there's a few places in Chassidus where it talks about the idea that it means not destruction like we understand in the simple sense, but in the sense that the world is going to be on an incomparably higher level, such that anything that we perceive as metzios is no longer going to exist in any form that we can recognize. It's going to be visible only as pure elikus. So therefore, like it actually says, there's going to be no malacha, because malacha is the idea of avodis habirurim. There's not going to need to be any birur at that point. Everything has already been nisbarer. So therefore, in that sense, we can refer to it as the time of Shabbos, and then we can refer to it as charuv, as in destroyed and desolate, in the sense that there is nothing else other than pure elikus. So why is it true? So in most places, actually, I haven't found very many places in Siddur where it talks about one versus two. Most of them seem to follow Rav Katina's opinion that says that there's one. There is actually a sikha in Chelek Zayin where the Rebbe analyzes like this. We know that you have a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia elsewhere about the question, Limosa Mashiach, what's going to happen with the dangerous animals? Where it says, Vishbati Chayarom in Aretz, doesn't mean that they're going to still exist but not be harmful anymore, not be dangerous anymore, or it doesn't mean they're going to be completely removed from the world. So that ties that in with this over here, that we can say, according to the opinion that Chad Charuv, so the idea is, in other words, like this, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's only 1,000 years that are Kolei Shabbos, because he holds, like Rabbi Katina, that Chad Charuv. Therefore, according to him, you can have a Mizmor Shir that refers to that 1,000 years of world, or of not world, really, because Chad Charuv. According to Abaya's way of looking at it, that's Terei Charuv, you can't really have a Mizmor Shir, the Yom HaShabbos, that refers to one day, one millennium of that. Therefore, he has to say that it refers to the original Shabbos of Ma'aseh Bereishis. So again, in that Sicha, in Chelek Zayin, that ties that in with this Machloikas about whether, if you say that the wild animals are still going to continue to exist but not be harmful anymore, means, first of all, there's only one change that's needed to take them from being dangerous to being non-dangerous. That's like Chad Charuv. And it also more reflects the fact that before by Ma'aseh Bereishis originally, the animals weren't dangerous. Only afterwards did they become. As opposed to, if you say that they have to be first made not dangerous and then removed altogether, then it means you need a double change. That's Terei Charuv. And then in that case, you have something new that never existed before, because by Ma'aseh Bereishis, the animals did exist. As soon as Hashem created them, they existed already on that first Shabbos, and therefore it's not really the same thing, and therefore Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos would, if it's going to refer to something new, it would have to refer exclusively to that. Okay. Now, there's also, by the way, there's places in Chassidus where it ties in this word charuv Here we have it, it's printed over here, Chariv, but in the printed Gemara, it's printed as Charuv. There are places where it ties it in. The famous thing, you have Reb Chanina ben Dosa would subsist on a Kav Charuvim from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, and Reb Shimon ben Yochai and Reb Elazar ate Charuvim in the cave over there, that it all ties in. We're talking about a very high level of Gilui HaLikus, of the kind that is like almost overwhelms the world and makes it, and then makes it that it's Ois Metzius. Okay. The Gemara says, B'muspe de Shabbos maho yo'imim. What Shir Shoyim would they say in the Beis Hamikdash by Musaf of Shabbos? So here we were talking about the Shir Shoyim, which they would do by the Talmud Shal Shachar. Now, what about when it comes to the Korban Musaf? In general, the rule is, by the way, every Shir that it's talking about was done while they're pouring the wine of the Nesachim of the Korban on the Mizbeach. You have, when it comes to the Korban Pesach, there's no Nesachim, so then they would do it while they're Shech Korban. Anyway, so by the Musafim, again, you have wine that goes with them. So what would they say? Amar of Onan bar Rava, Amar Rav, Haziv Loch. They would split up Shiras Hazinu into six parts. And they would do, and as Gemara is going to explain soon, they would do one part every Shabbos. Rashi gives a division how it is. Rashi's division has that the first three sections are each six psukim, and then he says the last three sections are each eight psukim. If you count up the psukim as we have them in our chumashim, in our sifrei Torah, it's actually 666898 in Rashi's division. So either Rashi had a different division of psukim, or he means eight, or at least eight, or something. Whatever. According to Rashi, it's fairly symmetrical. Tosfos brings a couple of other possibilities that are in different manuscripts, and in Masech the Soifrim and in Rabbeinu Chananel. The Rambam has yet another one. So there are everybody agrees the hay is hazin, the zayin is zechor yemosolam, which is pasuk zayin. The rest of them, the Yud, the Vav, the Lamed, and the Chaf, there are various opinions what they are. So they would split it up like that, and they would do one every week. In fact, the Masechta Sofrim, the Masechta Sofrim's version of it has between the Yud and the Vav, there's only two psukim. The Masechta Sofrim begins the Yud with Yautivehu, and then the Vav is Vayishvan Yeshurin, which is only two psukim later. So the Amr of Chanan bar Rav, Amr Rav, Kederach Shechalukim Kan, Kach Chalukim Beis HaKnesses, the same division that they do here for the shir of Musaf in the Beis HaMikdash is the same way. We divide them up in Shul. We also divide up Hazinu, the Shira of Hazinu, into six Aliyahs, and they go like that. And the seventh Aliyah is the Psukim after the Shira until the end of the Parashah. Following the Sechta Sofrim, that one of them is only two psukim. Obviously, we can't do it that way in Shul, because you need at least three psukim for each aliyah. So of necessity, then it would mean that if we had a point in the Sechta Sofrim in Shul, it would have to be somewhat different. So Marsha points out that there's a good simon in it that they use the word Haziv Loch, because this is the Shira of Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, it's even brought that Moshe signs his name at the beginning of it, the initials of the psukim from the beginning of the first letter of each pasuk from Hazinu until Hal Hashem Tikmud Ozois add up to the gematria of Moshe. It's broad. In fact, that's one reason why the hay is extra large, because the end of Moshe's signature, so to speak. So now, Haziv Loch, the glow, the shine is yours, referring to the shine of Moshe Rabbeinu's face, Karan Urpano. So therefore, we divide it like that. Next, there's an interesting sicha in Chelek Chav Dalet where the Rebbe talks about. So what's the idea? Why of all things are they using Hazinu as a shira in the Beis Mikdash? It doesn't include Poronus and things like that. So here Marashah says, okay, the Chachamim picked all the shiras that you find in the Torah. The Chachamim picked all three shiras that you find in Chumash. This as Yashir and the shira of the Be'er, and they set them up as the shiras for Shabbos. And he explains also, the vote is, on weekdays we do Tillim, which is from David, who's on a lesser level than Moshe Rabbeinu. Then on Shabbos we want to do the shiras of Moshe. Still, the Rebbe asks in the Sicha, I mean, large parts of Hazinu are not really so positive. So why are we using them why B'chlal is it called the shira anyway? And why are we using it as a shira in the Beis Mikdash? One thing is that Evan makes the point over there, actually, that if you follow Rashi's division, it comes out there are sections that are entirely Poronos and no Nechama in it at all. Whereas if you follow the Rambams, which is actually how we have it in our Chumashim, some of them do have Poronos, but every single one does have Nechama in it as well. And that's the idea, is that we're showing that the Poronos is only there. It's only Yeridat Sora Chaliyah, and therefore, yes, it deserves to be called a Shira. It is, after all, a song of happiness to Hashem. That even though the things that Hashem had to make things happen the way he did, nevertheless, it's all for the purpose of Nechama. Interestingly, also in that sikha, the Rebbe goes on and finds a connection between each, why Dafka, they split it into six parts, no more, no less. He explains over there that actually you can find a connection between each of the six sections of Hazinu and the respective Shir Shoyim. The first one corresponds, the first one where we said that Hashem first created the world, Kana V'Hikna, V'Shalat Ba'olam, corresponds to the first few psukim. I'm going to teach you Torah, Yarev Kamato Likhi. The second one, which talks about that Hashem split up the heaven and earth and ruled over it, corresponds to the second part, Zechori Mos Olam, when Hashem split up, brought the Mabul and divided up the nations and scattered them all over the world and so forth. And so each one corresponds to an appropriate part of the Shir. So that's why they did it Dafka in six. Next, the Gemara says, "B'mincha the Shabbos Mahoyurim." What about on by Mincha by the Talmud Chaben HaBayim on Shabbos? What Shira did they say? Now the other weekdays, the Gemara is not asking about that. The Pashtos, because they would just do the same one. But on Shabbos, the Mishmaris would switch. The old Mishma would do the Avoida of the Talmud Shal Shachar and the Musaf, and then they're done. Their shift, and the new Mishma would take over the Talmud Shal Ben HaBayim. Therefore, the Gemara assumes there had to have been a different Shira for that. So they would do the other shiras that you find in the Torah. The beginning of Oz Yashir from the Shiras Ayam, Micha Moicha, which is from the middle of that, it's considered like a separate perek. It's like a new theme in the Shira. And then the Oz Yashir, meaning the Shira of the Be'er in Parshas Chukas. So again, the idea is, Marashah says, that they wanted to gather together all the shiras that Moshe Rabbeinu said in the Torah, and all of those are going to be specially for Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, "Hani kula b'chad Shabbos amalahu?" When we say "Oz Yashu mikamoicha" and "Oz Yashu," do we mean that they were all on one Shabbos? Oydumo kol Shabbos b'Shabbos amrichad. Or maybe it means one Shabbos they would do the first half of "Oz Yashu," the second Shabbos they would do mikamoicha until the end of the Shira, the third one they would do the Shira Sabeir and then repeat over. So the Gemara says, "Toshma the Tanya." We learn in a brisa, "Amar Rabbi Yosi ad shorishona imeres achas." While the first one, meaning Hazinu, is going through one cycle, Shnia Chazeres Shtayim, the second one, meaning the other Shiras, would go through two cycles, because there are six parts of Hazinu and three parts of the other Shiras. Shema Mina, Kol Shabbos v'Shabbos Amrichad, that shows that each week they would do one of them. So the first Shabbos they would do one, the second one, the third, and meanwhile they've gone through half of Hazinu, and then the fourth, fifth, and sixth Shabbos, and they're doing the second half of Hazinu, and they would repeat over these three Shiras and go like that. The Rambam seems to have had a different view, so the Rambam doesn't mention the Shira Sabeir, he mentions only Oz Yosher and Mika Moicha. So either he would hold that they split it into three parts, or he would have a different Girsa in the Gemara, that while they went through one cycle of that, they would only have gone through one third of Hazinu, and so they'd have three cycles to one. The Gemara mentions the point that the Sanhedrin had moved to Yavne, and they made a number of the Takonis that it mentions in our Perek. Over there, in particular, you have the part about that you blow shofar in based in only when it's a based in that's a regularly established based in like the one in Yavne, and you have various takonis that it mentions over there that were done in Yavne. So that's going to lead the Gemara into discussing the various places where Sanhedrin went into Golus after they left the Lishkas Agazis. But first, by preface to that, the Gemara starts mentioning the Golus in that the Shchin went through. But actually, I guess we'll leave that for tomorrow. I guess. Yem yem Mashiach Gola. See, Meshchodesh Nissen. So we know we have the minhag. I hope everybody has remembered it over here to say the parasha of the Nasi on Meshchodesh Nissen. We say Nachshon and Aminadav, and then we continue through each day with each of the others. So the Rebbe talks about the Yesh Loimar, that this minhag of reading the parashas and the Nesiim and Nissen really has to do with the whole concept of Geula, which is in Chodesh Nissen. The entire Chodesh Nissen is a time of Geula, as Chazal tells us. B'Nissen, we learned earlier in this Masechta. B'Nissen Nigolu, we were redeemed from Mitzrayim and Nissen. B'Nissen Asidim Ligol, and we'll be redeemed from this Golus and Nissen. So, and the word Nissen itself is Meloshen Nes. The Gemara mentions in Brachas that if a person sees the name Nissen in a dream, then it means that Nissim are going to be done for him. So therefore, during Chodesh Nissen, we read about the Nesiim, about the Korbanos of the Nesiim, for the Chanukah Samishkan, because that's the most appropriate time for the Geula Amidus Vashlema. And then there's going to be the Chanukah Beis Mikdash HaShlishi, which is the ultimate completion of the Mishkan and the Beis Mikdash. In fact, in that connection, actually, you have psukim in Yechezkel. We read some of them as the haftarah for Parashas Achodesh that talk about various korbanos loss of lavoi that seem to be very different than the korbanos that we have listed in the Torah. And in fact, the Gemara mentions that the Chachamim were concerned about that, and they were thinking of hiding away safely Yechezkel because people are going to misinterpret it, until Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Gordon went and explained the psukim. One of the explanations is, in fact, that those are korbanos miluim, and the Malbim in particular explains over there, it mentions over there unusual korbanos doing Chodesh Nissen and doing Pesach and doing Sukkot. So he explains that actually what's going to be is there's going to be a Chanukah Sabayis that begins in Nissen and extends all the way through to the following Tishrei, and therefore during all that time and the various Yom Tovim during that time, then yes, there are special korbanos being brought from miluim. So we see, in other words, the idea that the miluim, the Bais Mikdash, are actually going to begin in Nissen. Okay, continuing halachas of Shabbos. When you have a black piece of clothing, and the Alter Rebbe adds, it means when it's new specifically, so it's very black. So if you have snow or dust on it, you're not allowed to shake it off, because that would be malabin. That's you're doing that in order to make it look clean and nice. But you would be allowed to. On the other hand, if you have little feathers on it, you are allowed to take those off by hand. The Alter Rebbe agrees with that, although the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says yesh choshishin, some are choshish on that as well, that maybe you shouldn't do that. Another halacha, more about dirt on clothing.
So
if it's not new, then it's okay, because then it's not really so. It's anyway got dust and whatever on it. So therefore, when you shake off the extra dust, you're not really making it look any better than it did before.
Brushing
it might be more of an issue, yeah. Because then you actually are getting it more to its pristine state, yeah. Okay, another halacha. If you have mud on your foot or on your shoe, you're allowed to remove it with something that's not mukzah, or you can scrape, you can rub it against, for example, a beam or something like that, but not on the wall or on the ground, because then it's part of binyan. Then like you're adding dirt to the building or to the ground, and that would be a problem of binyan. The shasad chak, for example, you have let's say instead of mud, instead it's tzoya, and you don't want that on your shoe, then you would be allowed to wipe it off on the wall. Now, the Rebbe actually says differently. Me'ikra din, you're allowed to, even on the ground or on the wall. L'chatzchila, it's better to use a beam or wooden wall or something like that. If you don't have a wall available, then you can rub it on the ground. And if you have water, then you can wash it off if it's made out of leather. Because but when it comes to leather, the whole concept of kibbutz doesn't apply to leather if you just pour water on it. Cloth, if you pour water on it, you have a problem with kibbutz, which is a tolda malabin. But leather, you don't have that if you're just pouring water on it, only if you rub it together the way you do when you're actually cleaning leather. Either way, though, you're not allowed to scrape it off with a knife from a leather shoe, because that would be a problem of machet. That's the malacha of smoothing out leather. Sometimes you have, they used to have, sometimes you see them even now in front of old houses, you have these little things built into the ground, these scrapers that are meant precisely for that purpose. So if it's sharp, then you're not allowed to use that for that purpose. If it's not sharp, then it's fine.
Same problem for rubbing on the ground?
No, so it's a different thing. Rubbing on the ground, the problem is, he's saying that the problem is then you're adding more to the ground. So you're doing the malacha of boina. You're building up the ground by adding more dirt, by adding more mud to it. This kind of scraper that we're talking about, the problem is you're scraping a leather shoe on it, you have an issue of mamachet, that you're smoothing out the leather. Would that apply to shoes, for example, with rubber soles like we have nowadays? That I don't know. It's hard to say that mamachet applies to those, but I don't really know, actually.